It's 4:10, and I'm going to get started since we are now an hour and 10 minutes late. This is the Community Services Committee meeting. I am co-chair, Councilwoman Diller. I will go around the table. We have President Hartley Nagel. We have council members Tackett, Hollins, Smiley, Cartier, and Weiner, and my aide, Sue Moore, is taking minutes. We can't approve the minutes at the moment. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Oh, yeah,
motion
we do.
Approved.
Okay, motion to approve?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay, first on the agenda is Ordinance 17-048. This is an annual appropriation of state funds to the various libraries, and they include library administration, Appaquinimic, Bear, Claymont, Brandywine, Ellesmere, Hocassin, Kirkwood, Newark, and the Woodlawn Library. Any questions?
No.
No questions? Okay. Mr. Henry, you will be doing the bulk of this. Would you like to join us at the table?
Thank you, Chair. Mm-hmm. Good afternoon, Marcus Henry, General Manager of Department of Community Services. Thank you for this time. I believe we're going to defer the PAL annual report to the next meeting, correct?
Yes,
okay.
That would be fine. We've been joined by Councilman Street.
Okay, I'll move on to the root. With respect to the Route 9 library update, we're going to pass out PowerPoint and also a summation of the library programming proposed for the fall when we open up September 12th. In the interest of time, I had a pretty extensive PowerPoint presentation. I'd like council to review it. It really expounds on the memo I sent out last week to council. So just in interim to our next meeting, if any questions on both the PowerPoint and the library programming overview, I'm available. So just feel free to call or email me. And we can cover this certainly in greater detail our next community services hearing.
Any questions from council? Mr. Street.
I don't have any questions today. And rather than engage in what y'all would consider the conduct of unbecoming the council and express my outrage and my genuine pessimism now of the likelihood of the library opening in all those specialized rooms, in the cafe being in that space, 40,000 square foot, being utilized for its designated purpose. I'm going to ask for a meeting. This fool seems to be over. I asked questions a month ago. The matrix from the previous administration doesn't answer those questions. I don't care about opening day and the celebration and the ribbon cutting. I care about what's going to be there once it opens. So I want to meet with the county exec, and you know, I would hope that, because I think it's going to cost the money, it's not in the budget, I don't know, but I'd like somebody from finance to, if a meeting is asked for and is granted with the exec, that somebody from finance, one of the co-chairs, accompany me, and rather than waste time today expressing my outrage and pessimism, then I'll ask the I'd like to ask the county executive to finally go on and answer my questions. And second, I'd like to clear everybody here. Comments I got 3 weeks ago in terms of we're partnering with Colonial School District. If I thought the Colonial School District could do what needed to be done, I would have never started screaming and hollering and begging for a library 12 years ago. If you look at Eisenberg School and McCullough School, where the kids that live in proximity to that library go. Not one single grade span and not one subject in either of those schools do anywhere near 50% of the students meet the standard in any single subject. So the partnership with Colonial versus what I thought and understood was going to be an emphasis on literacy, an emphasis on training, it's not reflected in the budget. And I want to have this conversation one-on-one or two-on-one or whatever with the county executive. And just tell me the truth. If it's just going to be a library like the rest of them, we're going to waste that space and tell them. But the only conversation he's had with me since he's been in office is that the library was going to be used, wasn't going to be revived, and it was going to be open with its designated purpose and function. That's not reflected in this budget.
Thank you, Mr. Street. And please feel free to let council members know when that meeting is. I'm sure we will have people from finance and community services that would like to join you in that meeting.
Thank you.
All right. We have been joined by Councilman Sheldon and Councilwoman Kilpatrick. We are moving on to the state vacant housing legislation. Mr. Henry.
Sure. Carrie, did you want to give this overview?
Sure. I gave everybody a one-pager. It should be on your chair. Newcastle County has been working.
And this is Carrie Casey.
Sorry.
Thank you.
With the Department of Community Services. For about a year, Newcastle County, the City of Wilmington, Wilmington Land Bank, nonprofits as of like Interfaith and Habitat, the Delaware Housing Coalition have been working on addressing blight and coming up with a blight package and having that be something that the General Assembly looks at every year. And our first year, we just had our first two bills introduced and put into committee, and we focused on some initiatives that would have no fiscal impact but would actually help with some of the processes that we go forward as jurisdictions. So the two, this is a summary. It will probably be heard in committee on June 7th, from what I hear. It was put into the Housing and Community Affairs Committee. Representative J.J. Johnson is the House sponsor, and Senator Townsend is the Senate sponsor. And we are hopeful that these relatively non-controversial items will be passed this General Assembly, which is sort of our first foray as a statewide coalition going after blight, because blight affects everybody from Sussex to the city, and we've all been working together. It's really exciting. So in case you hear from your constituents or any of your state legislators, this is happening. It's very exciting, and we hope that we will have some, you know, that it'll get passed this year.
Councilman Smiley.
Do you have the House bill numbers?
Yes, it's House Bill 178 and House Bill 177. And I have the House, it's HB 187 and 188. I'm sorry. And so far, J.J. Johnson, Senator Townsend, Representative Bolden, Moreau, Brian Short, Senator Henry, Representatives Mitchell, and Senator Hansen have all agreed to co-sponsor this legislation. So it's really exciting stuff. So anyway, just wanted to let you all know about this. And if you have a little summary, and I will send it electronically as well. Thank you.
Councilman Cartier.
Thank you. Going to this sheet regarding the anti-blight legislation, the final paragraph, application of liens for political subdivisions. So I've read the paragraph. We haven't had the ability in the past to place liens on property.
We do place liens on it, but we don't treat it like a tax, lien. Uh-huh. Like the City of Wilmington, in state code, it allows the City of Wilmington has the authority to place any sort of abatement or grass cutting, anything like that, on directly as a tax lien.
Okay.
They are the only jurisdiction, the local government, allowed to do that. So basically, we're asking that all the jurisdictions power. Have that power. And also including some additional categories that can be put in as liens, because of the fact is that we're obviously, Councilman Tack and others know, the Land Use Committee is we're performing a lot of maintenance, we're spending a lot of money, and we want to start getting our administrative costs on these properties, not the person, but the property.
I think that this is a much needed additional power. I really wasn't clear that
we couldn't just go after this completely. But it's like everything else you do. It's like a double-edged sword, right? Because we get the ability to lean all our costs regarding a blighted property or vacant property that's blight. You know, you pile the liens up too high, people aren't going to want to turn the house around.
Right.
So, you know, you got to really, that's a real delicate balancing act. I don't know. We got to really look at that. I'm glad we're going to get the additional power. We need it. But, you know.
And we're talking about, I mean, the Newcastle County, in comparison to the city where you do, the vacant housing fees will go, I mean, houses do end up, the fees end up being much higher than the properties were. We still have a lot of value in property in Newcastle County.
Right.
Where the banks, a lot of that zombie property stuff we hear about is largely due to the fact that a bank has no incentive to bring the house to sheriff sale because they can just sit on it for years and years and wait while we maintain it. So this at least gives us some recourse to get us, you know, but you're right. It's definitely a balancing act because many jurisdictions around the country, they do have that issue where the house actually is less than the fees that have accumulated.
I'm not even saying that it has to be less than the fees. I'm just saying if you look at a lot of these, you know, flippers and all, they want to get in quickly, get it done, sell it. I mean, do they want to come in and pay $10,000 or $15,000 on the front end that they see no value from in the property? You know, I don't know. But let's go forward and see what we can do.
Councilman Tackett?
Yeah, I Gary pretty much answered it. The only thing I was going to add in that was is that these are the vacant and zombie properties that are sitting out there, and that these fees actually give us the power and put us in the driver's seat to allow us to force the sheriff's sale to take these properties that are sitting out there, that blights on the communities, and as the county, and we're the driver, we now have the ability, let's say if we want to abate some of those fees and eliminate them, that we have the potential to do that, but this actually gives us the power to do it. And also, I think we need to look at another leg of this, and we've already talked about this, about empowering another company. Let's say that if we do take the house to sheriff's sale and we buy it because of the fees on it, that there's a partner that we have that we turn the house over to that then works with our nonprofits, our rehabs, our Habitat for Humanity, that does rehab it to get it back on the market for the people that can't out there looking for the homeownership.
Right, which is relates to the other piece, which is the pre-qualification of sheriff's sale bidders. You have people that come to sheriff's sale that have code violations and aren't paying taxes on a lot of properties around the county and the state. And they shouldn't really be able to keep being these bad actors. So these two things, though they don't seem like big things, are actually going to hopefully, especially with the Wilmington Land Bank, it's going to start bringing like 500 houses to sheriff sale. And they need to have the ability, because they don't have a trump bid, they don't get first choice. They have to bid with the investor. So they have to make sure, we have to make sure that we're getting good players that want to help communities, not want to perpetuate vacancy. That's what the two pieces do.
Mr. Smiley.
I just want to quickly say, I have two ladies, I don't know if I spoke to this a few weeks ago or not, but I have two ladies in my district who actually formed a company and thought they were going to rehab houses, but they thought they were going to rehab and want everybody else's money. Didn't work out. So they restructured their business, and they now negotiate short sales, and they have contractors ready to buy the home. Last week, I sent them a list of 12 at the beginning of last week. At the end of the week, they already had the owner, and their vacant property, they already had the owner, and they were in a meeting with the bank negotiating a short sale to get the owner out from underneath, and they had a contractor ready to take it. So they seem to be doing some, they seem to finally found the niche.
Right, but we just have to make sure that we're also stabilizing communities. We want to make sure that we have people that have the community as the best interest as well, which I know those two ladies, and I know they do great work. We just want to make sure that we have the best folks at the table.
I understand. All I'm saying is there's another avenue out there to, and quite honestly, I'm sending them a list of my vacancies. If they can get a contractor in there fixing them up and get people in them, God bless them.
Yeah.
Okay, can we move on? Mr. Henry. Mr. Street.
I guess it depends on how we use power that we get, the power that we get. You know, I've seen the city take people's houses for $500. And there are those, some of which you may call conspiracy theorists, but there are those that maintain the view, especially with the land banks in the city, that it's intended primarily to benefit developers who are and the government is complicit in taking property from low-income people, and it comports with positions that folks are being run out of neighborhoods to the benefit of developers, and that it was mean-spirited and not well-intended. So I just hope we don't get to the point where the authority we have becomes abusive in any way. And I certainly don't want to go to policies and practices. I don't know what this administration is going to do, but previous administrations have done in the city, because I continue to be concerned about the intentional policies that were put forward by several administrations in the city to purposely and intentionally run poor people and low-income people out of the city. And if you just look at the situation we were in and the threats at the federal level to entitlement programs and home repair programs, now folks won't be able to get money to repair their programs, so the house begins to fall apart. And then what happens to that owner-occupant who can't fix up the house, and then we go in inside and take the property? That's not helping. So at some point in time, we need to look at some alternatives, some plan Bs and some plan Cs, to at least make an effort to protect those who are genuinely trying and are doing the best that they can do under the circumstances.
And Karen Casey, this is just enabling legislation, so we would develop that. You know, that would just allow jurisdictions to create programs and policies. Our intent has always been vacant properties that are draining, you know, but we would definitely, you know, it would just enable us to think about it and start that process of thinking about what our program would look like.
And don't get me wrong, I mean, I've got as many, if not more, issued vacant properties and their impact in my district as anybody else. I mean, they're drug houses and havens for all kind of crimes, but separate and apart from drugs. So it needs to be done. I just want to do what we can as a government to build in safeguards and procedures that are fair.
Definitely. I'd like to recognize that Councilman Powers has joined us. And Ms. Casey, will you be doing the annual plan?
No, I'll just do it from here.
Okay.
We're going to go through this very briefly. This is the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, our annual plan for the upcoming fiscal year, July 1, 2017 to June 30th, 2018. We've discussed before that we anticipate level funding for the year that starts July 1. So going into this, we know we went through this five-year planning process back in 2015. These were the goals of HUD to do these three things. And then these were the goals and priorities that came from the 18-month stakeholder process we did to develop our five-year plan. Really regarding expanding affordable homeownership, helping rehab owner-occupied units, increasing homeownership, rental housing, special needs housing, helping homeless populations, and also strengthening communities through public services, and also economic opportunities and self-sufficiency. Our target populations, which you know, we have been our target populations for a long time, except I think we did add youth aging out of foster care through our last strategic plan. These are the groups that that we target with our funding. So we started this process November of 2016 with a fall public hearing, which we advertised, put on our website, emailed everybody. That's our largest meeting. We have hundreds of people that show up. Our application was due December 19th. We did our public notice April 17th. We had our public meeting on April 26th. Our public comment period ended on May 15th. We're here today to talk to you, just to tell you about the action plan. The resolution should come in June. We will submit our annual plan to HUD to be determined, which is a first, because we've usually always had our annual plan due May 15th, but because the Congress acted so late on our budget, we were not allowed to submit our annual plan, which filled us with agita because we're so used to these deadlines. And they said, do not send us your annual plan. So we had to like keep it back. So we haven't been able to send it, and we are waiting till we get our HUD numbers, our actual specific numbers, before we can actually send it. So again, we've never had this happen to us, but HUD has told us do not send it to us because they want the real numbers.
This is exactly what I said. We know what the total amounts are nationally, and we always base 5% decrease, though we pretty much should be getting level funding. You just never know because they look at census data, et cetera. So this is what we anticipate getting, close to $2 million in CDBG. Home, we anticipate getting $688,000. Our emergency solutions grant program, $185,000. And then the rest is carry forward and program income from the loans that revolve. Again, we talked briefly. It's next year we're worried about because they want to zero out CDBG and home. So that would be zero. So these are some of the projects that we funded through our grant process, some really awesome projects. Habitat, which we've funded for years. You've all been aware of the work done in Middletown to increase home ownership, as well as Interfaith's awesome work in Dunleaf. They are also a partner in the Strong Neighborhood Housing Fund program that we just received money for. I wanted to say briefly, Diamond State Community Landlords, they work a lot in Kent and Sussex County, and they actually are going to do a down payment sort of loan program for their clients to buy a house outside of a concentrated area of poverty. The house will then become affordable forever. And it's a really interesting new innovative thing. I'm telling you, it's going to be awesome. So we'll be able to report on that next year. So instead of building a house, they're going to incentivize somebody to buy an existing house in Newcastle County. We do our in-house programs, our emergency home repair, our larger loans, our relocation money for when we have a fire or we're doing lead cleanup, and then obviously our senior minor home repair grants, which is really the run of our money that we spend. And we have about 700 people on our waiting list currently. Increasing home ownership opportunities. First Time Home Buyers Program is the CDBG funded program. We have done about 68 loans this year. We will have to close the program at the end of the month due to the fact we've used all our funding. But we are so excited by the idea of bringing Revamp back. And we also should be getting some of our money back from the IDEA loan that you guys supported a year ago, because it only had a one-year deferral period. So we should be getting some loan money back from that so we can reinvest it into keeping those programs going. Supporting housing for people with disabilities is a priority. We do a lot of work with ARC. They for about $100,000 in home funds, were able to do renovations to 10 group homes throughout the county. And also Connections Community Support Programs, as well as our Architectural Accessibility Grant Programs. The Connections to homes, one's for men, one's for women, in the southern part of the county. Assist those at risk of becoming homeless. We have really spent, put a good chunk of our $75,000 in CDBG we usually are able to spend about $300 in CDBG on public service now in housing. So this is a good chunk of money. We have as you probably all know, we have a lot of people that are just, really at risk of getting evicted. These programs provide utility assistance, rental assistance to keep them in their home. And then our homeless populations. Again, $182,000 in both emergency solutions grant funding and CDBG funding. That's shelter operations and also what we call rapid rehousing, which is taking someone from an emergency shelter into a permanent housing situation with wraparound services, support services. It's that housing first model. Let's get people into housing, then provide them with the wraparound case management they need, and it's proven to work. And the county, as well as the state of Delaware and the city of Wilmington, have really put a lot of funding and have sort of worked together collaboratively to fund certain organizations in each area so we can maximize the impact, which is also a first. It's really cool stuff happening statewide because of the fact we're worried about our money and we think it's best to work together. If you only have 80,000 a jurisdiction, so that's 240,000 as a state, we work together to allocate the funding big chunks, so we're not giving every organization $30,000, and then that creates an administrative burden on the organization. So these are some of the groups that we do give the grants just to help the community development. Everything from senior center, food kitchen that Newcastle Absolute Jones Senior Center operates, to our summer camps, to UCP's Camp Menito, which is a summer camp for kids and family members, and their family members in the summer. The Edgemoor Revitalization Cooperative, Duffy's Hope, just a lot of really good programs throughout the county that serve most serve the entire county. And then expanding economic opportunities, Goodwill, Nehemiah Gateway with their low-income housing tax credit, the sign-up things that they do in all of our libraries, plus a really awesome program
Tech Impact, which is a job training program for 18 to 24-year-olds, places them in jobs. I mean, we're giving them like $10,000. They have such awesome results, and they are working throughout New Castle County. Last is our administrator. City of Newark is a cooperating community, so we are required to give them a certain percentage of our CDBG funds, as well as our total administration for all of our staff, not including Housing Choice Voucher, for the administrative piece, which is $648,757. So I can take that, and I think I got through it all. That is it. Vincent and Nicole, my colleagues, they are the ones that really run these programs and do an awesome job administering and making sure that every penny is spent appropriately. We were recently monitored by HUD for our home program and came off with flying colors, and so they just couldn't make it today, but that's so what we'll see is the resolution for the annual plan will come probably the first meeting in June, and then once we get the green light from HUD, we'll be able to submit the annual plan. It has, you know, whenever they allow us to submit it, once we know what our final numbers are.
That had to be the quickest presentation I've ever seen. Congratulations. At this point, we are only 37 minutes behind schedule. Councilman Holland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of questions, Carrie. I watched, I believe it was the second slide, when you mentioned targeted populations, veterans, homeless, and so forth. I did not see reentry there. Reentry has been a part of our targeted population. Along with that, I know that's one of the most challenging populations that we have, and the fact that Interfaith Housing, who we mentioned, who's done a great job in Route 9 Carter, but they've also partnered to have housing opportunities and training, rather, not housing opportunities, but training and day redevelopment for folks that are being reentered into society.
Yeah.
So I think that reentry is a critical population that we need to continue to have in our non-needs population.
Yeah,
I see no reason to take that out.
No, and I think it might just been an error, because when we did our five-year strategic plan, one of our focus groups was specifically on reentry.
Okay.
And we fund reentry. We don't fund interface-specific program, but we do fund reentry programs. So they are definitely a. They are also with ES, with our Emergency Solutions Grant Program, because they're people coming out of institutions. That is a targeted population as well for housing, but it is also for community services. I apologize. It should be on there.
And the other question I had, when you mentioned first-time homebuyer funds not being available because we're going to run out of CDBG, what about the other funds that we have for first-time homebuyers, such as
we have used all of the associates and all the revolving for the year. Yeah,
okay,
I mean we literally exhaust every single penny. We did appropriate some of that money, I think, earlier in the year, but we've spent it already. I mean, there's just, you know, the home it's just a really good market right now, and a lot of people want our product. So yes, it's all spent.
It's all gone. I just don't want to overlook the other.
I mean, we might have one loan left in associates. Okay. We're going to close it May 31st. We might be able to wiggle around to June 15th, but you know, we're kind of telling our housing counselors we probably have to stop May 31st.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilman Tackett, and we're only 38 minutes behind schedule.
And this only takes 5 seconds.
Thank you.
You are wonderful. Your department is phenomenal. What you do with the resources that you have, the way you're able to stretch them from allocations from year to year and then make them last even past the allocations, that's coming from the department. I know it's a team you work with.
Yep.
I just echo the sentiments you've heard out of the members of council, and also, you are probably the example that everybody ought to adhere to be.
Thank you.
Well, I think it's the department.
Councilman Street. 39 minutes behind schedule.
Can I get a 40, make 41?
That's 41. Right.
I acquiesce.
Thank you.
Everything Councilman Texas is about you. And I do know we had election change administration. We have one agency that was receiving funds, I think around $50,000, decided they weren't going to participate anymore.
They did not apply.
And I assume that that money went back into CDBG, and you dispersed that as you deemed appropriate as administration, as opposed to folks being able, as they thought, being able to designate how it was going to be spent once they let it go.
Yeah. They did. That organization did not apply for fiscal year 18 funds, but they were also let us know they wouldn't be able to spend the remaining money. So yes, we will be able to reallocate. We are reallocating those funds.
for public service work.
Okay.
Okay. Anything under other?
Thank you, Ambassador.
I'm not ambassador anymore. I gave my hat up last week, so you cannot call me that anymore. Thank you, though.
Motion adjourned.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay.